Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Florida State Basketball. This is your host, Nick Andre. Thank you guys once again for tuning in. My co-host, Austin, will be on momentarily as we discuss some recent news on the men's side of things. But you know we have to start with the women's side of things. First and foremost, before we even begin, I hope everyone's week is getting off to a great start. I know it's Monday. I know yesterday we just witnessed South Carolina win the national championship, defeating Iowa. Shout out to the Gamecocks. And today we will be tuning into the men's side, which is the championship game between UConn and Purdue. Let me know who you guys have, because that's going to be a really tough matchup between two really good teams, two top seeds, you know, in their region. So it should be a really good matchup, to say the least. But let's dive into some women's news around Florida State basketball team. It's been really quiet, to say the least, since the first round loss against Alabama. We actually recently just got some news as far as transfers. Sakaya White is looking to transfer. And the same thing with Lucia Navarro is looking to transfer as well. And let me just say this, you know, both of those players are really tremendous all-around players. Sakaya, who got a lot of playing time this past season. Her and Avery Treadwell were really good backup centers right next to Mikayla Timpson. But it just seemed like for Sakaya, maybe just wasn't the right opportunity. Maybe she wanted more of an opportunity, because it was really a hit or miss per se. So, and then the same thing, you know, with Lucia Navarro, you know, who only played 5 games this season. So never really got much of an opportunity to really showcase her, true talents in Tallahassee. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, things happen. You know, at the end of the day, you know, coaches have to make decisions that, you know, that forces a lot of players to have to make sacrifices. So, you know, I definitely wish nothing but the best on their next endeavors. And, you know, hopefully whatever school that they end up going to will be the right situation for them. Like I said, Sakaya played a huge role with the team, averaged around 2.5 points and 3, and you know, a little over 3 rebounds. As a really backup center, so I think wherever she goes, she would definitely thrive in her position. Same thing with Lucia as well. Now, with that being said, we have some other big news around the women's team, which is a key visit that happened just recently, which is former Miami Hurricanes point guard Jalea Williams, who just recently visited the team. And you know, there's pictures of her on IG, Instagram per se, standing next to players like Tanaya Lasso, Mario Gordon, and then of course meeting up with the coaching staff with Brooke Wyckoff, Bill Ferreira, and others as well. So at least from what we saw in the IG post, seems like things that went really well. For those who may not know about Jalea, obviously she, like I said, played for the ACC rival Miami Hurricanes. Played 3 seasons with them, career averages are 7 points, 4 rebounds, a little over 1.5 steals in 99 games played. And she played a huge role even last season during the 2022-23 season in helping Miami get to a deep tournament run, you know, last year. So this is a key veteran. And I think, especially now with Sarah Bajetti no longer with the team, I think that's what Florida State's going to need is, who's going to be a key veteran for this team, who's going to be able to set the tone, who's going to be able to be a vocal leader on and off the court, who's just going to be able to do a multitude of things that can help this team win. And I think Jalea can definitely do that. You know, for those who may have not really watched her play, she's a tremendous two-way player. One thing that stands out to me is her defense. You know, she gets after defensively. It doesn't matter who she's matched up against. She provides tremendous ball pressure. She doesn't mind getting into the passing lanes. She can pick you up 94 feet. She does not mind taking pride on the end of the floor. And with her continuing to just bring that energy defensively, it leads to a lot of turnovers and at least the easy opportunities for a team, as you saw last year and even in the previous years playing for the Miami Hurricanes. So I think that's exactly what Florida State really needs, especially, like I said, especially now with Sarah Bajetti no longer being with the team. You need somebody who's going to be able to set the tone, especially on the perimeter. And Sarah Bajetti was most definitely the best perimeter defender on this team. So if they can find a way to pick up Jalea in his transfer portal, that's going to be really huge. And I think she can mesh well with the other starters like Tanaya Lasson, Mario Gordon, Snoop Turnage, and even Mikayla Timpson, you know, because she's also a great scorer and she's also a really great playmaker as well. She's very unselfish with the basketball in her hands. And she knows how to play a certain role. And whatever Coach Brooke will have her play, I'm sure she'll be able to thrive in that role. So that's something to definitely keep in mind, you know. So I don't know if Jalea has made a decision as of yet. I don't know when she'll be able to make that decision, but I think Florida State could be a really good situation for her. I know, like I said, I know that we are the rivals of Miami, and I know that may not look good for her from her perspective. Just, I mean, especially when you look at how Matthew Cleveland went from Florida State to Miami this past year, so I get it. But at the end of the day, I think that this is going to be a really good situation. I mean, you know, this basketball team has been really incredible over the past few years. You know, we've made it to 11 straight NCAA tournaments, and the success is not going to stop. And I think Jalea will be able to fit with this team perfectly. Like I say, you know, she'll be able to play her role to perfection. And I think it'll just work well for this team overall, man. So that's just some news to keep you guys updated on the women's side, man. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Now, as we transition, Austin will join me as we talk about some recent news on the men's team. Tune in. All right, before we dive more into this episode, I just want to say a happy belated birthday to my co-host, Austin, man. Hope that it was a good one, man. How was your birthday, man?
Appreciate it, man. It was good. My actual birthday, I didn't really do much. Went to a concert Thursday night and dinner Friday night, and it's been good, man. It's been good.
That's what's up, man. Fellow Aries, you know, my birthday's coming up later on this week, so, you know, it's going to be a really good one, man. So definitely glad to see that your birthday was doing pretty well, man. But with that being said, man, let's dive into some hoops talk, man. I mean, transfer portal has been really busy for us as far as Florida State, and a new candidate has entered, which is Cam Corin. Interesting to see, you know, a lot of the class of 2022 has been hitting the portal for this class. Two seasons for Florida State for Cam, played total 60 games, 8.8 points, 3.7 rebounds. Had some really big games in his sophomore year. I thought he was really important in his sophomore season, you know, and I think we saw that even when he went down. I think it was like late November, like around December time, you know, whenever he did go down with his injury. And we definitely saw how impactful his loss really was. But, you know, he had some big games. You know, the Miami game sticks out where he shot 7-7 from the floor. And then, of course, the game against Pitt late in the season where he had 25 points. So talk about Cam entering the transfer portal.
Yeah, it was an up-down season for him. You mentioned he got hurt with that toe injury. I want to say it was the UNLV game. I remember it was the Sunshine Slam event in Daytona, but I forget if it was UNLV or Colorado. I want to say it was UNLV. Then missed pretty much all of December. I know there was one game he tried to play, only played about 10 minutes, and then pretty much missed the rest of the month. Deontay Green started in his place. And then even once he came back, Deontay was still starting. Corn didn't really start until late February. I want to say it was the Boston College game off the top of my head at home that he finally started again. And, you know, he played well. You mentioned that Pitt game, 25 points, 8 rebounds. He was better as the season went along. You know, he struggled at times with catching the ball around the basket and finishing. But once he did catch it, I mean, he was phenomenal finishing. I want to say he shot close to 65% from the floor. Part of that has to do with he didn't really stretch his game out as much this year. I think he only took 2 threes, not very many mid-range shots. His free throw shooting definitely fell off a cliff from, you know, 79% as a freshman to 67% as a sophomore. So definitely some things that you could tell they were working on with his form and his jump shot. And I don't know if this is one of those where Coach Hamilton's saying, hey, we didn't love the defensive impact you have, and we want to go back to how we were and have those true seven-footers, and you're just, you know, 6'9", 6'10", forward who can play the five. But I think Corin would like to play the four. And that's what he was recruited to Florida State to do. I don't know that he really has the body type to do that. We'll see as his transfer selection process goes. But maybe something kind of like Bobo Miller, where the staff's ideal situation for Corin was a little bit different than Corin's ideal situation for himself. So I wasn't too surprised to see it. Of course, the news had to come on my birthday, and I wasn't very happy with that because I think Corin is a great player, and I think wherever he ends up is going to get a very good player. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Corin is an excellent player. I mean, if you ask me, he was one of my personal favorites to watch on the team last year. And
okay.
I had been saying, you know, if there's anybody that was deserving of that starting center spot, it had to have been Cam Corin. You know, I just feel like, you know, his impact, especially defensively, was just really well. I understand, you know, he's not a true seven-footer, but, you know, he definitely brought the impact as far as, you know, being a good rim protector. You know, he could switch on multiple positions, just being able to hold his own against any opponent. So, though, you know, and of course, you know, offensively, you know, being able to play and pick and roll, you know, being able to catch the ball around the basket, being able to score inside. He did knock down some mid-range shots, but like, I mean, it's like you say, you know, he wasn't able to really expand his game to the capacity that maybe Florida State may have wanted him to. So maybe that played a role as well. And I guess you could say, in a way, he really didn't play, or he kind of played out of position in a way, because even now, as I'm reflecting back, I can't remember exactly what school he went to, but I know he went to school in Texas.
It was Sunrise Christian.
Right. So, yes, I mean, so me just watching how he was in high school, you know, just watching his play style, you know, him kind of playing outside, you know, kind of having that, like, kind of displaying that ball handling ability and everything. You know, it wasn't on full display, at least on full display, you know, like throughout his tenure at Florida State. So maybe there was, maybe this was a situation where he was kind of playing out of position. Who knows? But I'll be really kind of surprised me in a way, because I thought that he would continue to be an intricate piece to Florida State, but unfortunately, this may not turn out that way. We do know that he has an upcoming visit with Pitt on April the 12th, I believe it is. So, you know, that's going to be really interesting to me. And they've been on his radar at least before he even entered the transfer portal. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what's next for Cam moving forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. He only played about 21 minutes per game. When he was being recruited, the hot rumor had been they wanted to use him in the Fiondu Capengalli role. And, you know, especially last year, I thought that was the plan, but just injuries kind of kept that from being a reality, and they had to use him a lot more than they really wanted to. And, you know, when Capengalli first got to campus, they wanted him to be a full-time four and then play small ball five. As he filled his frame out, he pretty much became just a full-time five with some four here and there. But I remember in that 2017-18 season, there was lineups with him at the four and neither Kamaji or Ike Obiagu at the five. And it's a lot of size, and I know Florida State wanted to do that. I don't know that Corin has that lateral quickness that Capengalli did. I mean, he was a rare athlete, and Really that whole family is. When you're in that Mutombo bloodline, it's an athletic family. Not saying that Corin isn't athletic. He's just not to that level.
Right.
With the Pitt visit, the timing was definitely interesting. I was talking about it before we recorded. It was announced that he was expected to enter the portal Wednesday. The announcement came that he was visiting Pitt Thursday morning. And then I believe he was officially in the portal by Thursday afternoon. So I don't know if that timeline's correct. That's just what's been reported. I don't know if anything's going to come of that. We'll see. And Pitt leaning in his direction from their perspective is interesting, because if you look at what they've done these last few years with their bigs, they had Federico. They had the Diaz-Graham twins. And those are all three of those guys are tall, skinny, lanky bigs that can block shots, protect the rim, but they're also very mobile, can stretch out in space. So interested to see that they're going with them shorter, stockier Corin, at least interest wise. We'll see what other schools end up being interested in him. I know a couple of people told me Illinois, which was a team that was really hot on him when he was a recruit, and might circle the tires there again. But we'll just have to see. Pitt would be an interesting one. I don't know that'd be the best fit for him, but they did have success with John Hugley, who was, you know, 6'7" offensive motor down low. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking in my head, you know, it just seems like, you know, especially in the ACC, you know, there's just like a lot of, you know, really tall bigs. And like you say, you know, Cam is a solid 6'10 in a way. So do you think, you know, with his position, you know, being like kind of an undersized guy kind of hurts him as well, as kind of in a way in the ACC?
Not necessarily. I mean, it just depends on the scheme more than anything.
Right.
And I know Florida State wanted to play 1-5 switching defense. I just don't really think that fits Corin. For the most part, he could do it better than a lot of bigs his size can, but I still don't think it's what he'd prefer to do. And you see that with his rebounding numbers. I mean, there's no reason someone his size should be averaging less than 4 rebounds per game. But a lot of that was due to Florida State's scheme, and he's being drawn out from the basket so often. And I'm sure that's tiring for someone of his size who's probably used to playing around the basket.
No, I get that 100%. Like I say, you know, I thought it was going to work out with Cam, you know, Florida State. You know, unfortunately, you know, it seemed like not everybody's on the same page. But I think anywhere he goes, he's going to be able to thrive. You know, he's a very high IQ player. You know, he seems like he knows how to play the right way. So, you know, I think anywhere he goes, whether it's Pitt or whether it's another school, you know, I think he'll be able to thrive, you know, in any position, you know, moving forward. But another guy we could touch on real quick before we get out of here is Tom House, who has entered the transfer portal. This is another guy, you know, who was a part of that sophomore class, that 2022 class, you know, that team heading into college. And Tom House, you know, he's had his ups and downs. You know, he's not really been a consistent factor in the rotation. So I don't know if him entering the transfer portal has caught many people by surprise. Did it catch you by surprise?
Probably not. The only thing that surprised me is how long it took. I mean, it's been 3 weeks since Selection Sunday? Yeah, 3 weeks today since Selection Sunday. So I was surprised it took this long. The three names when the season ended that I'm like were for sure entering the portal were Primo, House, and Deontay Green. Primo and Deontay entered like 2 days after Selection Sunday, it felt like. And now here we are a few weeks later and Tom House is in the portal. So I wasn't surprised it took this long, if anything. But he didn't really play much. I mean, he appeared in 23 games this year, but it was less than 4 minutes per game. He played a lot more as a freshman, but it was only out of necessity because that team was so banged up his freshman year in 22-23. So I'm not surprised for a team that desperately needed shooting, and he can provide that. I mean, 47% from three this year, but there's a reason he couldn't get on the floor, and that's because of his defense and his ball handling and his ability to do anything outside of shoot. So wasn't surprised whatsoever. He's got good size. I mean, listed at 6'7". I don't know if he's actually that tall. And he's got better athleticism than you would think. But it was very clear that it just wasn't going to work at Florida State. And you can tell by the teams that have shown their initial interest in him that he's just not an ACC caliber player. You know, it's been Indiana State, Furman. And I've already forget some of the other schools because it's been a few days. But it's all mid-majors. There's been no high major programs that have reached out to him so far. And it's not a surprise.
Yeah, that's definitely a strong suit. It's definitely shooting it. You know, he definitely has weaknesses in other areas of his game, whether it's ball handling and you know, the defense, just like you mentioned. It's funny because I went to one of the exhibition games last year or this past year, whenever they played. I believe it was Flagler, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And he actually had some pretty good moments, you know, as far as shooting was. And I thought, you know, with him having such a good shooting games, I thought that he would probably be able to somehow crack his way into the rotation. But it just never turned out that way. It's like you mentioned, you know, he played about under 4 minutes in a lot of games. A lot of games, it was really pretty much, you know, garbage time, you know, when the game was already decided. So, I mean, it's like you said, I mean, I 100% agree with you. Maybe the ACC is not a conference that can possibly work in his favor. And maybe he needs to go to a program who does value his shooting and understands, you know, that that's really his only strong suit.
Yeah, and I just looked up a couple other schools. It's in his hometown state. So Akron, Ohio University, I believe Toledo also reached out to him as well. So a few schools in his home state. But yeah, I totally agree. I just don't think it was going to work out in the ACC. And sometimes that's fine. At the same time, that 2022 recruiting class is rough when you go back and look at it. Even when you count in transfers and a high caliber walk-on, they took 9 players, and Chandler Jackson's the only one standing as of right now, and even that could change this week. We'd have to see. But, you know, Papa Miller's gone. Tom House is now gone. Jeremiah Bembry left last year. Deontay Green is gone. Darren Green Jr. and Jalen Gainey were brought in as transfers. The walk-on was Tabor Polinkis from IMG Academy, who a lot of people liked, but didn't work out. Chandler Jackson's the only one left 2 years later. Granted, that's this world of college basketball, and sometimes we have to deal with it. At the same time, that is crazy to look back on because that was a top 20 class.
Right. And that's what I was going to ask you, too. Do you believe that, you know, Chandler Jackson could possibly enter his name into the transfer portal? Because I'm a Chandler Jackson fan. I thought he had his high moments throughout the season, but, you know, there's always been rumblings about, you know, his maturity and, you know, things that are going on off the court.
Yeah. Who knows? I love Chandler Jackson. I think he's a great character. But at the same time, you know, there has been some moments. He was suspended before the season for reasons unknown to the rest of the world. He had that two game road stretch this year where he didn't play at Louisville and at Boston College, but then he came back and had great games. I mean, he was pretty good for a third of ACC play, you know, a few games there and double figure scoring. I think he's got a very high ceiling. He's kind of got that dog in him that this team kind of needs defensively. And I don't think I've ever seen a player better at forcing tie-ups than Chandler Jackson. I mean, it's really an oddity. I've never seen anything like it. But at the same time, he does need to show a little bit more consistency game to game. He needs to grow up, have a little bit more maturity. But a lot of college kids are like that. It's not just a Chandler Jackson case.
I agree 100%. You know, I think what game was it? I think it was against Boston College where he started in Darren Green Jr.'s place. He had like 19 points per se or something like that. So, I mean, he's shown that, you know, he could be a great energizer, whether it's starting, you know, being in a starting spot or even coming off the bench. And I feel like, you know, he had a lot of high moments where, you know, especially being in the second unit where he would come in and he would provide a lot of energy, whether it's, you know, being a spot-up shooter, whether it's putting the ball on the floor and making a play. And even of course, you mentioned, you know, being able to make great defensive plays. So, you know, I'm a fan of Chandler Jackson. I hope that it works well for him. But, you know, it's like you said, I mean, you know, with this class of 22 class, you know, everybody entering the transfer portal, you know, you just never know. So we'll just have to see what's next moving forward, man. But
I'm just going to give you some box score numbers real quick. From January on, had 14 points at home against Georgia Tech, 10 at home against UNC in a surprisingly low-scoring game, 17 at home against Virginia. I thought he was awesome in that
game. Yeah, he was good in that game, yeah.
And then 19 against Boston College, like you just mentioned, 7 of 10 from the floor, 2 of 10 from 3, and is that 3 steals as well? Yeah, so he had a really great game against Boston College at home. So he had some moments down the stretch, and I hope he's still on the roster because he looks like a fun guy to have on a team and he's a fun guy to cover. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if he were to move on.
Yeah. I forgot about that Virginia game. You know, that he had a really great show that game. Because I mean, because for the most part, they were like really struggling throughout most of the game.
He almost won that game for Florida State. Yeah. I mean, Virginia was shooting the absolute lights out, especially Isaac McNeely, and Chandler Jackson came off the bench and gave them some great minutes. I want to say he ended up being in their closing lineups, and 22 minutes was the second most he played all year in that game following the 33-minute game against Boston College. So I think with him, just trust with the staff is the biggest thing. They're not sure if they can quite trust him on and off the floor yet, and as he grows up, he'll continue to build that trust.
100%. I mean, he's clearly shown his value on the floor. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. But it's all about, you know, continuing to have trust in the coaching staff, everybody being on the same page, and just continue to move forward from there. But that'll wrap up this episode. Austin, appreciate you for coming on once again. Definitely let the people know where to find you, where to find your recent articles or any work.
Yes, sir. Y'all can find me on X/Twitter at EasyVZNG, and then SI.com/FSU/basketball for the most part. Or you can just go to my author profile there, Austin Vizi.
Yes, sir. Make sure to check all that out. The links will be at the bottom of this description. Follow myself and Nick Andre ATR. Make sure to check me on Chop Chat. Make sure to check out all the recent work that I do there, cover Florida State basketball. Once again, we appreciate you guys for listening in, and we hope you guys have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.